Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Wednesday, April 10th. Our top story today, it's a year since a major cliff collapse closed a road in North Kent. Part of the A226 Galley Hill Road in Swanscombe remains shut after chalk came down onto the Manaway Business Park below. A water leak was initially blamed, but Thames Water says the cause is yet to be determined. They're working with the council. Jeremy Kite is leader of Dartford Council.
If I'm brutally honest, it does come down to a very, very unusual occurrence, and I don't think there's been much dragging of heels on it. I mean, Dartford isn't actually any party to this. I mean, it's a matter between KCC, the water company, government, highways. So we kind of oversee it. We've got a watching brief on behalf of the community, of course. But the truth is, it is such an unprecedented event, and it is such a large-scale solution. The day it happened, or the evening it happened, I remember looking at it, and I went on Google Earth to find out exactly where it was and to orientate myself. And I must be honest, I was surprised that the spine road was quite as thin as it was. And I'm sure lots of other people, when they look at it, realise now that that chalk spine is incredibly thin. I won't say that collapse was inevitable, but it does seem that once it's happened, we have to learn the lessons. What was interesting is that about half a mile up the road, Dartford does own a bit of land, very similar situation. We spent £5 million putting it up, shoring it up, making it safe for people at Waterstone Park. It's not a very sexy project. Nobody sort of thanks you for it, but it's the kind of investment that was needed, frankly, to maintain it. We are where we are, and I think this is going to be a very long solution. I must be honest. I mean, I'm an outsider. I'm not directly involved in it, but my belief is I can't see a simple solution to this. And I think if it were me, and I'm not technically expertise in this, I have no technical expertise, but if it were me, I'd be looking at an alternative route, I think, rather than trying to look at how that can be repaired. But as I say, please don't think that's a horse's mouth comment. It isn't. It's a very uninformed one, from my opinion. But it's a very, very big project to put right.
Ronnie Pierce works at Lancebox Demolition, which was badly damaged in the collapse. He spoke to our reporter at the time.
I got a phone call from the old man said, the cliffs give way, and I had to rush up there with my sliders, and that came up. First thing I wanted to do was get the gates open and get all the lorries we had out here in, but then once I opened the shutter there, I realised I can't salvage nothing in there, because that risk, it can't, you know, coming worse and falling on top of me, so.
What did it look like when you first...
Oh, it's chaos, yeah. The police car sat outside. I think they was just waiting for the fire brigade to turn up. So I opened the gates for them, and they had a look inside, and they said, yeah, it's not safe to be in here.
So, I mean, if you're just describing what, literally the cliffs come down on top of your workshop, is it?
Or, yeah, that's it, yeah, and a storage area. You could see the water was still, like, coming down from the cliff, and then even when we was here, there was bits still falling down. So, yeah, they asked us to vacate the area. And
were you worried, scared at the time?
Well, not scared, but I just thought it's best not to be stood under here, you know. Best get out of here and just let them do what they can do. And then leave it to the legal side, whatever's got to happen.
Yeah, do you know how much damage it's caused?
Well, I couldn't put a price to it now. Especially when we've got, like, a lorry sitting in there as is, you know, stuck in there. I couldn't put a price on it.
Yeah. And what do you know what's going to happen, like, going forward?
Well, no, originally they said we can't be here, but you know, we've still got businesses to run. We can't, no one's paying us if we're not open, so yeah, we've got to just carry on as normal and hopefully this gets sorted out, you know.
Martin Butcher lives close to the cliff collapse and has been speaking to reporter Keely Greenwood.
It's been a complete nightmare. My journey to work is now, like I've got said, it's gone up nearly 40% distance wise, and obviously they've got the fuel with that as well. But me and Mrs. for the alleyway. It's like it's just too dangerous for her to do anything. So she'd give up half of her part-time work. She had two jobs, so now she's only got one. So that's half the income there.
How much longer is your mileage?
It's roughly an extra 3.5 miles longer than what it was.
Every day.
Yeah, every day. Unless I can try to go through Swanscombe if I want, but then you've got the old Mexican standoff with the cars fighting about who wants to give way and all that, but it's just a complete nightmare, really.
KCC say specialist engineers and contractors have been appointed to carry out the first phase of investigations and stabilisation works. Now, another of our top stories today, an inquest has heard a dad of two from Thanet died after unintentionally overdosing on painkillers. Oliver Griggs was discovered unresponsive at his home in Birchington in November last year. Abby's been following this story for the Kent Online podcast. Abby, what do we know about Oliver's injuries and how was he managing the pain?
The 31-year-old was suffering from a slipped herniated disc in his back and was prescribed the medication just to help him get on top of the pain. His family say the injury was debilitating. He was struggling to work and do day-to-day tasks like getting in and out of the bath. The coroner found it was a mix of large doses of the painkillers that caused the unintended consequences.
Were there any concerns at the time about how much or the type of medication he'd been prescribed?
Yes, well, his family did raise concerns about the amount of pain relief he was being prescribed. They also criticised a lack of close monitoring that he received once getting those prescriptions. The hearing into his death found that Oliver was aware of the addictive nature of the drugs. He had had discussions about dependency with his GP. And at one point, doctors offered him advice on how to use the medication correctly and even refused to increase his morphine dose. Now, he had been scheduled for another appointment the day after he died.
And the coroner's in no doubt that this was an accident.
That's right. The fact that Oliver and his partner of almost 9 years were planning to get married, visit Disneyland with their children, those details were enough for the coroner to conclude that he hadn't intended to take his own life. It was found that all of the medications mixed together led to respiratory depression, and obesity and an enlarged heart were listed as secondary factors.
Thanks, Abby. A fundraiser has been set up to help the family cover the cost of the funeral. So far, it's raised more than £3,000.
Kent Online News.
An inquest has heard the man who firebombed an immigration processing centre in Dover viewed indecent images of children months before the attack. Andrew Leake took his own life after throwing four improvised explosives from his car window at the Western Jetfoil Centre in 2022. Two people reportedly suffered minor injuries in the attack. The 66-year-old's social media pages were found to be littered with far-right content, including tirades against asylum seekers, Muslims and the royal family. The hearing was also told Leake had suffered with his mental health, which spiralled further out of control after his son's sudden death months before the attack. A Gravesend woman who helped two teenagers attack a homeless man with a machete has been sent to prison. A court was told Moona Fuggles and her boyfriend arranged to meet the victim before the violent attack in January last year. The 43-year-old from Medhurst Crescent has been locked up for 18 months. Police investigating a £5 million gambling investment scam in Folkestone have charged two men. At least 130 investors are alleged to have been defrauded over a four-year period from 2017. A 33-year-old from Wingham and a 61-year-old from London are due in court in May, accused of fraud offences. A man has been charged following a string of thefts from vehicles in Thanet. Drivers reported that wallets, bank cards and sunglasses had gone missing from their cars. 30-year-old Lewis Tedham of Prestige Avenue in Ramsgate was charged with five counts of theft and a further four counts of vehicle interference. Residents near a woodland in Ashford say they're furious after finding it torn to shreds and littered with glass. There are also reports the remains of a car have been scattered around grassland at the top of Kingswood car park in Chollock. Police say they're investigating the damage. There have been calls for CCTV to be installed.
Kent Online News.
Less than half of staff at a Kent NHS Trust would be happy for loved ones to be treated there, according to a new survey. Even fewer, at 44%, would recommend the East Kent Trust as a place to work. That's the lowest in the country. It's one of the largest trusts with hospitals in Ashford, Dover, Canterbury, Margate and Folkestone. Dan Essen is our local democracy reporter.
There's the board of directors of East Kent Hospitals Trust, which runs five hospitals across East Kent. It's one of the biggest NHS hospital trusts in the country. And at that meeting, they discussed in some detail the responses to the NHS staff survey, which happens every year at every NHS institution in the country. But this time around, the results for East Kent NHS were especially bad.
Just explain to us some of the main findings from that survey of staff.
Sure. So there's 122 acute NHS trusts in England. Those are NHS trusts which run hospitals. Some of them only run one, some of them run loads. Like I said, East Kent runs five. The NHS staff survey happens every year. It measures basically all sorts of metrics for NHS staff satisfaction, how they feel about their job, how they feel about the care provided at the trust they work at, all that sort of thing. But this time around for East Kent Hospitals, on some metrics, essentially they scored the worst in the entirety of England. And on some of them, they were among the worst. For example, Only 45% of NHS staff said that they would be happy with the, of East Kent Hospital staff, that is, said they would be happy with the standard of care provided there if a family member or a relative or friend or anything like that was there. Compare that to, for example, not too far away in Mason and Tunbridge Wells, are at 74%. So East Kent Hospitals is close to being one of the worst in the country on that, but not quite. Only about 60.5% said that care of patients felt like it was the top priority for the trust, which is, I think, the worst in the country, compared to, for example, 80% at Mason and Tunbridge Wells. So yeah, essentially on a lot of key metrics, East Kent Hospital is not doing very well.
What was the reaction during the meeting? Because that can't be easy listening for the bosses there.
No, I mean, they were pretty candid about the fact the chair of the board of directors said his words were, "It's awful. There's no other word for it." So they were very open about the fact that they know they have a lot of work to do and that these are quite profoundly terrible results for them. The chief people officer, who I suppose is essentially the head of HR for the whole trust, said that turnout was low. It was only 41%, but she knows that the reason turnout was so low was because a lot of staff feel like there's no point voicing their opinion because they don't think anything would change. So yeah, essentially everyone in the meeting, members of the board of directors, made quite clear that they realise how bad the results are for them. They said that they've touched base with a few hundred staff already through these like listening events that they're going to be holding, but whether or not that will actually lead to any sort of measurable change by the time the next survey happens, which is September, October this year, will remain to be seen.
New figures show more than 80% of Kent police officers feel worse off financially than they did 5 years ago. 15% say they will resign within the next 2 years. Bosses say cost of living pressures are making recruitment difficult and have asked the government to give officers a 6% pay rise. The Director of Human Resources for Kent Police says they're doing all they can to support staff, including offering access to advice on how to manage bills, budgeting and debt, and they'll work closely with officers to understand the issues they're facing. University of Kent staff have voted to go out on strike over cuts to courses. Six subjects are being scrapped and as many as 60 jobs could be lost as the uni looks to save money. It comes as Vice Chancellor Karen Cox, who's in charge of the cuts, announced she's resigning next month. A former care home in Kent is set to be used to house unaccompanied asylum-seeking children. People living near Edward Moore House in Gravesend have been contacted by the County Council about the plans. The facility closed in 2022 and will provide space for up to 36 under-16s from September. Drivers in Folkestone are being offered free tamper-proof screws to help secure number plates after multiple thefts. Cars in New Romney, Dimchurch and Hythe have been targeted. The screws are designed to be harder to remove and can be collected from Folkestone Police Station.
Kent Online News.
A pharmacy has reopened in Gravesend 2 years after a devastating fire. The blaze actually broke out in a derelict former pub on Milton Road before spreading to the building next door in May 2022. Pender Pharmacy was forced to close and relocate but has now returned to the high street. Stephen Kane is the pharmacist there.
It's fantastic. We've been operating our NHS dispensing service from our premises in Gravesend Medical Centre, which has been good, but it's really good to have premises back in the community. I feel we need to be based in the community and get our healthcare message out there directly from the street, and we're great to be back doing that.
It's been quite a long time coming, hasn't it? I think you've been closed now, Milton Road, for about 2 years. So.
It has been 2 years. We've had a lot of difficulty with finding the correct premises, NHS contracts and things, but it's all come together now, so we're really happy to be back.
And what can the people expect in the future?
We're looking to promote further services, stop smoking service, vaccination service, the pharmacy first service, possibly supervised services from for people on addiction drugs. Everything that pharmacy is now being required to do by the NHS, it's going to be a completely comprehensive service.
Now, ahead of the local elections next month, Kent has had a visit from a party leader.
I'm finding on the doorstep, people are switching to the Liberal Democrats for positive reasons, but also they really want to send a message to the Conservative government. People are sick and tired of the Conservatives. They don't care, they've taken people for granted, they've let people down. And so in places like rural Tunbridge Wells, and indeed across Kent, we think there's a real chance for Liberal Democrats to make gains against the Conservatives.
That's Lib Dems Sir Ed Davey, who's been in Tunbridge Wells. He was given a tour around the site of a former cinema that's been derelict for several years but is now being converted into a multi-storey housing complex. The party's keen to take overall control of the authority when residents go to the polls on May 2nd. Ben Chaplatt is the current council leader.
The Liberal Democrats have led a cross-party administration for the last 2 years. I think we've shown that we've got a real record of delivery for residents. I think we've got a very exciting plan for the next 2 years, which is in our five pledges, and hopefully residents will give us their support. The first one is we want to plant a tree for every resident in the borough. So, you know, to tackle climate change, I think that's gone down very well on the doorstep. So that's a really exciting project, which I'm really particularly excited about. We want people have also told us on the doorstep that there's not enough for young people in the town, so we want to look at delivering 6 community hubs. We want to make sure we've got the infrastructure in the right place. And we've frozen parking charges as well.
But what are the other parties promising for the area? Tom Dawlings is leader of the local Conservatives.
The main thing we want to change is we think there should be more action from the council. The Lib Dems have led the council in coalition now for 2 years. And many of the things that they say they've achieved are actually in the programme that they inherited from the Conservatives. And as far as I can see, have just gone into the slow lane, and I think that's disappointing. So we'd want to push on much more with the getting more business into Tunbridge Wells. We think that investment in Tunbridge Wells is really important. We think that putting on increasing car park parking fees is not helpful to that to encouraging investment.
Victoria Jones is hoping to become a Labour councillor for the first time. She's standing in Sherwood Ward.
We've got a list of priorities that we're really clear on, and I think they're landing really well on the doorstep in terms of the conversations that I'm having, but I think there's a lot of work to do. One of the most common things that comes up on the doorstep is around housing. So we've got lots of residents, particularly in Sherwood, who are living in overcrowded or poor quality housing, and there's just not enough homes for affordable rent, for social housing across the borough. Now, we know that there is a really good plan in terms of the local plan and how it identifies different areas where we could develop without kind of losing what makes our town so special. So we need to invest in those areas, and I believe that a Labour, you know, involvement on that on the council will really drive that forward.
Local elections will also be happening in Maidstone. We also get to choose who is Kent's Police and Crime Commissioner for the next 4 years.
Kent Online News.
A Kent uni is planning to move air conditioning units that have been blocking views of Canterbury's historic cathedral. The rooftop ventilation equipment was part of a new £65 million medical school run by Canterbury Christchurch University, but it came under fire when a local historian said it destroyed the view. Historic England has been working on a plan with the uni to move them to the ground and cover them with sheets. From camping and glamping to business and tourism, 4 finalists from Kent have made it into Visit England's Award for Excellence. Kent Wildlife Trust are up for the Ethical, Responsible and Sustainable Tourism Award, while the Battle of Britain Memorial has made it to the top 3 in New Tourism Business of the Year. Both Kits, Cotty Glamping and Boys Hall have also made the cut in their categories, and all 4 finalists are invited to the National Awards Ceremony in Liverpool this summer. An Arena man is celebrating 60 years working for the same glass merchant. Derek Royden joined Spooner's Glass in Gillingham after leaving school when he was 15. He never believed he'd be there 6 decades later, but these days he's there 5.5 days a week. He caught up with reporter Ellie Hodgson.
I left school in April 1964 when I was 15. I went to the youth employment office because I wanted to be a bricklayer. And I went to the youth employment office, I think it was the 1st of April 1964. I got the job, and I come over and saw Mr. Spooner, and he said, you can start the next day. So that was April 1964, 60 years ago this week. He said, I'll give you a 3-month start. So 60 years later, I'm still working there. Yeah, and I love the job.
So is that what's kept you here? What is it you love about the job?
I just love coming here. I love doing what I do. I like talking to people. Some people come in the shop for, you know, a little bit of glass. They say, how much is a bit of pitcher glass? I say, oh, £4, you know, and they stand and talk, you know, and they ask me how long I've been here, and they're quite happy. And I've only taken £4 off them, but they're quite happy that I've, you know, and they might stand in here for half an hour, 3/4 an hour, just talking about, well, things in general, really, yeah.
What does your wife think about it in general then?
My wife's quite happy that I come to work every day. She never moans about me coming to work.
Never.
No, she never moans about me coming to work, because she knows I work 5.5 days, go off at
5.5?
I go off about 7:15 in the morning. I work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday and Saturday mornings.
So you're at 60 years. How much longer do you see yourself? Are you going to be celebrating 70 years?
Oh, I'd like the thought of it, yeah. My wife said I probably won't pack up till I'm 80. I don't know. I'd like the thought of it. I don't really know. But I just like getting out of bed and coming to work. It's just part of my life for, 60 years. Yeah.
Would you say you're a workaholic?
I do enjoy work, yeah. Yeah, I like working, yeah, and I do. I like what I do, and I do like working, yeah. Because we still do a lot of manual work. I have to load the skip, unload lorries, load sheets of glass, double glazed units, which are some of them are quite heavy.
Fit and healthy, though.
Yeah, I'm quite. Yeah, I don't take no tablets, no medication. No. I haven't even got no fillings in my mouth.
Wow, that's
all my own teeth. I've got all my own teeth. I haven't got any fillings.
That's impressive. That's a story in itself.
Yeah. I've got all of my own hair.
That's the secret to long life and success is just staying at work.
Yeah.
Kent Online Sports.
Briefly to football, England's women have earned their first win of Euro 2025 qualifying with a victory over Ireland. Maidstone's Alessia Russo was part of the starting lineup as they secured the 2-0 result in Dublin. Their campaign continues with a home game against France next month. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.